Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I am delighted to be joined today by Rachel Smith, ExchangeWire CEO. Rachel, how are things in Australia, and how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Chi. And things in Australia are, as one might predict, hot and sunny. I don't want to rub it in. I know it's been raining a lot on the other side of the world, so I'll just keep quiet.
We've had 2 days of no rain, so yeah, optimistic here.
Dry spell.
Great, summer. Alongside Rachel, we've got John Still, ExchangeWire's Head of Content. John, how are you?
I am well, thank you. And yeah, it's, I think, 2 days in 2026 haven't rained, Rachel, so you're not missing anything on this side of the world. These 2 days have been an oasis in hell that we've been through. So yeah, looking forward to getting some sun soon.
I'm sending you my sunny vibes from the Southern Hemisphere.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Well, yes, this week we're going to be handing the mic over to our audience for our very first mailbag special. We've asked listeners to send in their burning questions from across the ad tech landscape, and we'll put these questions to our team, who then are going to dive in and answer them as best they can. So, very exciting. The first question today is from a listener, Kerry. And Kerry's question is, you've talked a lot about AI search, walled gardens, and retail commerce media shaping where budgets flow. If you're running a global media plan today, where would you over-index and where would you deliberately deprioritize spend over the next 2 to 3 years? Yes, this is a big question and you're going to have to put your media planner heads on. But Rachel, what are your thoughts? I'll come to you first on this.
Well, yes. Not being a media planner, this is a bit of a challenging one to answer, but I love it because it's a nicely detailed question that I think sort of picks up on, exactly the big strategic tension that's facing media planning these days, right? So somehow trying to direct budgets to where planner buyers and therefore brands and marketers are seeing growth, I suppose, so growth areas. And I mean, when I say growth, I mean in terms of audience engagement, perhaps also discoverability, intent, all of those good things that brands and marketers are looking for in terms of their marketing and advertising spend. But trying to balance that with also as somehow trying to understand massive shift in consumer behavior that we're seeing, where is it that people are actually going and spending their time and dedicating their eyeballs to in a digital environment, and what is influencing them to, purchase things. So I think it's a massive challenge that faces media buyers. So speaking very much from the point of view of not an expert, I think the things that I thought about when considering this question, the things that sort of come top of mind would be, I'd be looking to shift my investment to channels that hit those markers. So either growth in terms of, monetary opportunities and growth in terms of where audiences are shifting, and or environments where I feel like I'd be getting a good share of attention, audience attention, because we're starting to see consumers spending more time in those environments. So the two things that probably sit at the top of the pile for me, if I'm talking about diverting my media spending, would most certainly be what we refer to as retail media or commerce media. But I'd extrapolate on that and use some of the good stuff that we spend a lot of time talking about here at ExchangeWire, which is that, my opinion is retail, sort of dedicating marketing budgets to retail media, I'm using air quotes here, isn't just about putting that into traditional retail media networks. It's about dedicating it to any environment that's very data rich and that can give you all of the things that are showing a lot of promise and results for brands and marketers in a retail media environment. And so that's why it's interesting that, we sort of are now much more and more attaching those two terms together, retail media and commerce media. And I think another extrapolation of that, particularly in other markets where this is very popular, is social commerce. So I think all of that is an environment that they're not all the same channels or exactly the same environments. But what I mean when I say I'd be looking to spend more money in a retail media environment is anywhere that's retail commerce, even if it's got a social angle to it, where I am able to either bring my own data as a marketer, or I'm able to see that other data can be added into this environment. So it could be an owned and operated commerce style environment, but it could also be any kinds of digital environment where there is naturally a lot of data or additional data can be brought in, and where therefore I'm, you know, better understanding how my investment is being used. I can do targeting and optimization in that environment, and I'm getting a clearer understanding of how to measure the success of my marketing spend in that environment. So that'd be number one. And number two, and I blithered on a bit there, this one, number two will be quicker. Number two would be CTV, you know, streaming, premium video, and anything streaming video TV related in, you know, in an internet environment, therefore, I mean. And that is really a response to what I said earlier, which is I'd be looking to want to follow effectively the eyeballs. Where are people spending their time? And we just know that people are spending much more time in a video enabled environment, whether that is pure play CTV or whether we're talking about social media platforms. The point here is that they're consuming much more video content than they were even 12 months ago. You've only got to look at what we do as a B2B business in terms of sharing our content, but also more and more. Another example I use all the time is, you know, what premium publishers and news-based publishers are doing. Journalists, you know, I saw a great social media clip today from The Guardian, where a journalist was effectively, this was The Guardian Australia, and the journalist was effectively giving a rundown on a really in-depth piece that she's just published on, you know, The Guardian's website. So she was saying, this is what I've been researching this week. This is the piece that I've written. For the full piece, you can go to the site, but here's a quick rundown of what it's covering. And it was a fantastic, like, 1 minute, 30 second video. And I just think people are spending more and more time in that environment. So if I'm an advertiser, I'd be wanting to meet them right there. And then just in terms of the other part of Kerry's question was, what would you deprioritize? I would be that budget that I'm shifting into those channels, I'd be taking it from low quality display environments where either the impressions are not particularly viewable or they're relying entirely on third-party cookies, because we know that the effectiveness of only using third-party cookies, I'm not saying not using them at all, I'm talking about only using third-party cookies and relying on third-party cookies solely, is a really poor quality environment from a data point of view, and you're effectively just targeting at a browser level. It's not particularly personalised, and it's not particularly targeted, so I'd be moving money away from there.
Amazing, very detailed answer. And I guess the question there, John, for you is, like, what are your thoughts? Are you in agreement with Rachel on the areas that you would look to prioritize or over-index in terms of retail commerce, the data side of things, and also looking at the CTV streaming angle too? Or is there anywhere else that you feel needs to be added into that priority bucket?
Yeah, so I love this question. This is like, it's kind of a chance for us to cosplay media planning. It's good fun. I agree with Rachel. I think there was, you know, around following the data is really sound reasoning. CTV in particular was top of my list when I was thinking of where I'd over-index. I really like the possibilities of CTV, so that's where I'd really be looking. We didn't talk about AI, which I thought would be the first one, like whether we go, and I think that crosses over into probably everything, but particularly the agentic AI and the retail media, and whether I'd be looking to plow some budget into agentic AI advertising, however that shakes out, whatever format that takes. I think that would probably be high up on my list. But no, CTV was the one that first of all sprung to mind to answer Kerry's question. I was reading some research this morning from Media Ocean, who asked where planners would be cutting budget, more than a quarter more budget this year than last year. And the top was AI and AI agents. Second was digital display, and the third was CTV. So Yeah, I think you're fairly in agreement with the industry there, Rachel, and as am I. I would absolutely over-index on CTV, and it's me, I would also over-index on out of home. I think out of home is the possibilities of digital out of home are still being discovered and investigated. We've been talking about it for a while. It had a little resurgence after, obviously, the pandemic gave it a massive kicking. But it's coming back, and different regions are showing forward thinking about digital out of home. So I'd put some money in some really smart, innovative campaigns. I'm glad I don't have to think of them myself and just have to comment on them. But that's where I'd stick some budget.
It's really interesting, isn't it, that people are saying that they would shift budget into, you know, AI-enabled agentic advertising. I mean, firstly, what specifically do they mean by that? And then secondly, you know, one of the other things that I was thinking about in terms of deprioritization is that I would also be inclined to not be spreading my budget too thin. So I would be certainly looking to those areas that I suggested over-indexing on, but I would be saving some money for experimentation as well. And I wonder if that's how a lot of people are thinking about AI and agentic advertising. So I'd be probably saving a bit of budget to think to myself, well, what can I do that's a bit experimental in comparison to previous years? And the reason that I say that is because, you know, if we're talking about, there are so many, well, take retail media just for example anyway, you know, if we look at companies and businesses like Kevel that sort of basically provide the platform on which people can build retail media networks, a lot of that platform, or at least elements of it, tools that are available within that platform are absolutely AI enabled, so that you can do optimization and, you know, targeting, and that can be led in an agentic way. So, you know, I sort of wonder what people mean when they say that. And I think that's probably why, one of the reasons why it's not the first thing that I lead with, is because I see it as something that's going to be integrated into the way that you know, planner buyers put their you know, priorities together and put their campaign planning together. It's going to be made available within existing platforms or as an additional tool, and it's going to be a good add-on to have, but it's not going to be the thing that leads everything. Is where I would think about it.
Yeah, well, you're going to be both working for agencies shortly.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would absolutely deprioritize X. By the way,
I was going to say, I guess everyone could imagine that's exactly what you were going to say.
I would. You know, I think there's. I wouldn't take money away from social media in general. I would take it away from
particular Meta, channels, right?
For
or particular
many reasons platforms. Discussed on this podcast in the last few months, I would remove my spend from X at the moment, and I'd put it into different platforms. Like Rachel said, you know, like there's room for testing. There's new things that are working. Reddit is a huge proving ground now for brands to get involved. There is alternative social media. There's better ways of doing things. So yeah, that was obviously always going to be my answer for deprioritizing. I'm becoming a caricature of myself. It's dreadful.
Well, that's what we specialize in here at Exchange Wire, John. So don't be shy. There's also, of course, you'd be wanting to save a bit of budget to experiment with AI search advertising, whatever that might look like, on whatever LLM, you know, of the day is launching an ad option, because it'd be super interesting to see what that looks like, right? But like you, John, I certainly would be looking at the volume of platforms that I'm advertising on from a social media point of view, and I would be consolidating them, and I would be looking for, you know, where I'm going to get the best penetration. And I think the channels that we mentioned, retail media, commerce media, CTV, out of home, give really good bang for their buck.
Excellent. Well, yeah, brilliant. Thank you. And Kerry, thanks for sending in that question. I hope Rachel and John have answered this well enough for you. We're going to move on then to our second question, which is from Steve. And it's a bit of a big question. Are agencies in trouble? And yeah, John, going to give this one to you. Open the floor. What are your thoughts?
That's a big question. Thank you, Steve, for opening us up to that. It's a great question. No, in short, but lots of shades of grey in that. I think the model is shifting. I think this is a really you know, we say a lot, it's interesting times across the board, but for agencies in particular, we are seeing, you know, further consolidation in the holdcos. And we are, you know, there's horrible redundancies as a result of this consolidation. It's a tricky time for huge businesses like the holdcos. And that comes at a cost. But so, yeah, the agencies, like in that sense, are a little bit in trouble. But this is a good time for the independents. This is a good time for smaller, more nimble businesses. When innovation needs to be quick, when stuff's, you know, I keep saying this phrase, stuff's happening at the speed of culture, and I quite like that. And it's, you know, agencies can move at that speed. There aren't layers of, you know, sign off. There aren't these, you know, again, my favorite phrase, it's like turning a tanker for the holdcos. You cannot make something nimble overnight that has so many cogs. Indies don't have that. They're not encumbered by history. They're not encumbered by a massive, you know, a massive shareholder backing that they have to please. They can innovate, they can move fast, and they can test and learn. And so, no, I don't think agencies are in trouble. I think it depends what agency, and I think it depends at what level. But I'm kind of excited for people in agencies. I very much enjoy when we do interviews with people who are planning and strategizing in agencies and talking about, you know, the pace of change. It's frightening, but it's also invigorating. And AI is changing things. It's, you know, it is there. Can be used poorly, can be used to create slop, can be used to make poor advertising, but it can also be used to innovate fast, to streamline workflows, to allow people to be creative and really focus on what makes them tick, more so in indies than in holdcos. So I think agencies in general aren't in trouble. I think the holdco model is certainly shifting and in danger of big change. But I think it's a great time for indies to be staking a claim and to be taking bigger clients and to be doing really fun, really creative stuff.
Rachel, what is your stance on this? Because, yeah, obviously, as John has said, there is standard holdco agencies are evolving and there is new and we're seeing lots of opportunities for the independents. But, yeah, are you in the same mindset that this is an opportunity rather than agencies are in trouble?
Well, I mean, in a general sense, I guess, yes. But more specifically, I would say that agencies are no doubt suffering from being in an industry where doing the same thing that they've been doing for years is getting harder, not easier, right? I mean, of course, then, you know, anyone that's a specialist in change management listening to me say that would say, well, that's because they need to change. But I would say the entire time that we've been running ExchangeWire, you know, agencies have done nothing much else but change. You know, they're constantly, if we're looking at the holdcos here, they're constantly, fairly constantly restructuring and doing things differently. They go through periods of acquisition and growth and then periods of consolidation. Are they in trouble in the sense that, you know, we're not going to be looking at, you know, holdcos are not going to exist as they do today in another sort of 5 or 6 years' time? I think it's really hard to know because I do think that, you know, AI is disrupting things fast enough, not just in digital marketing and advertising and a lot of the work that agencies undertake, but in so many other industries. It's a bit difficult to say, you know, how much of an impact, a real meaningful impact will it have on the sorts of job roles that are very administrative and repetitive. And so therefore, what impact is it going to have on, you know, a whole range of industries, the advertising industry being one? I dare say that there are lots of roles at advertising agencies that can be performed with the use and help of AI. But I also really firmly believe that AI is not going to be the thing that is actually going to make advertising better. It's just going to equip people that create advertising with the ability to ask better questions and, you know, derive better insights from some of the data that's available, do that faster, be able to, you know, dive into that in more depth than they've been able to before because that information can be produced faster and because AI is constantly teaching us how to ask more in-depth and detailed questions. Obviously, those are things we're capable of ourselves, but I'm sure you guys are the same as we're all using various AI tools like LLMs. The way in which we pose questions for answers on the internet has already changed significantly. I mean, back in the days when you were just relying on Google as a search engine, you knew that you had to keep your question fairly general. Otherwise, you weren't going to get any results at all, or you were just going to get advertising-based results. Now, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like I'm re-coaching myself to ask questions in a different way because all the LLMs I'm using are giving me more detailed answers when I'm not expecting it and not getting to the depth of things when I am expecting it. And I know every time I ask a question, I'm not necessarily going to get meaningless results. I'm going to get something relevant. It's going to take me somewhere else, right? So if we think about that, our day-to-day use of AI, then of course it's going to absolutely revolutionize so many workplaces, ours included, and the workplace of everyone that works in agencies. Is that likely to have a bigger impact on whole cos than smaller independent agencies? Maybe, because they're bigger organizations and they have more staff working for them. So are they in trouble? No. But are things changing rapidly, and is that creating quite a lot of disruption? Yeah, for sure. And I suppose a thought on the independent agency side, I think John raises a really good point there. Independent agencies, I think, are born to thrive in an environment like the one that we're dealing with at the moment, which is quite a bit of chaos, lots of change, lots of fluctuation in how clients are engaging agencies, what clients are using, you know, which clients are using what agencies. That's you know, a real environment of opportunity for independent agencies. And the main reason is because, firstly, they're smaller, but secondly, they're more nimble. And thirdly, they've usually been born out of a desire to meet clients' needs in much more of a, you know, nimble way. So I think that independent agencies will do really well out of this period of disruption in marketing and advertising, whether that's fueled by AI or simply fueled by, as I said before, the way that we're consuming digital media, whatever the catalyst might be. I think that independent agencies are really well placed to do exciting things. And I think it comes back to that same principle, is that independent agencies are really good at being curious, asking lots of questions, wrapping their heads around how to do things differently. I'm not saying that individuals within holdcos don't have those talents too. They for sure do. But I just think the nature of those larger agencies doesn't necessarily lean into all of that really innovative stuff in the same way that process can happen in independent agencies. So I think it's a good time to be in an independent agency. It's probably a hard time to be in a holdco. It's probably as difficult as it's ever been, if not more, to work in an agency, because let's face it, that's never been an easy job ever.
Yeah. And as there is change and transition happening both in the holdcos and across independents, as you're talking about, do you see this, Rachel, as globally across the board, or are you seeing anything specific regionally?
So I think that it's really interesting here in APAC. Australia has got a really a growing and thriving independent agency landscape. So quite a good number of independent agencies for the size of the market, mostly starting with creative. That's how a lot of them have been born, is, you know, trying to fulfill a particular creative need or trying to innovate around creative tools. But of course, these days, executing a marketing and advertising campaign is, you know, often involves end-to-end, right? So even those creative agencies or agencies independent agencies that originally started to focus on creative execution are now really getting deep into the weeds of campaign optimization and what kind of data tools can we use to make these campaigns more effective for our clients. So Australia's got a really thriving indie agency scene. I would say that it's much more fragmented elsewhere in the region, and in Southeast Asia, it's still quite small, but you're starting to see the birth of a number of independent agencies within that region that are either homegrown, and then you're also seeing some independent agencies that have started, say, in the UK or Australia, sort of expand into Asia, which is super exciting. And You know, elsewhere in the region, obviously over in MENA, I think it's still very early days for independent agencies. But I think what's interesting about that region is that even within the holdcos, I think that agency folks in that region have got an opportunity to do things a little bit differently. It's an, you know, it's an industry that is at a different stage of maturation. The marketplace is at a different stage of maturity. And so agencies, you know, if I think about a couple of the folks that I've chatted with recently on the MadTech podcast, they both talked about they're both very passionately talked about some really interesting projects that they've been working on in the region where they feel like they're doing things differently to other regions because the benefit of maybe not being, first to the race is that you can see how things have been done elsewhere. You can learn from those mistakes and also successes and implement things differently in your region. And also too, you know, one of the things that agency folks in MENA have been keen to emphasize to us is that, you know, the way things are consumed is just different in that region, culturally different. So, for example, where we see in Southeast Asia, social commerce is massive. Over in MENA, we see that the traditional e-com is still huge, but there's absolutely a digital advertising play to be attached to that. And that's what I think some of the holdco agencies in the region are trying to grapple with and are doing quite well and probably doing better in that region than they are in other regions because it's an emerging market. So, you know, it's certainly not all, it's certainly not packing up the business and going home and finding a new career time. Anyone that works in an agency, but I don't underestimate how difficult it is to be operating in a time of such, turmoil.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of uncertainty, but everyone's finding their way and let's see what's to come from that. Excellent. Amazing. Well, let's move on to our third and final question for today, which is from listener Paul. The question is, which current investigations or policy moves do you think have the highest chance of really changing how media is bought and sold in the next few years? And John, I'm going to come to you first on this one.
This is really interesting. Again, I like this. This is a good format. I remain skeptical about the impact that stuff like the Google DOJ trial will actually have on the industry. That was the first thing that came to mind in terms of how a policy will change. And, you know, we were all here a little bit disappointed by the findings last year of the Google DOJ case. And, you know, that will be mired up in in appeals and everything for a few years. The one that really interests me is social media and the social media ban for under 16s. Rachel, I know, you know, where you are, that's come in and that's happening now. Keir Starmer has been talking about it this week for the UK and saying that talks are, I think he said it's certainly serious, but it, you know, not sure how quickly that'll move. But he's made overtures towards it, which is interesting. And that's, you know, it is really interesting that those platforms could be turned off to a fairly to a demographic that advertisers historically like to reach. So that one fascinates me. The EU case against X that's being brought up regarding, you know, the illicit materials that Grok can create and be circulated on the platform may affect how people put their money towards that particular platform. It's tricky because policy and judgments take so long to enforce and are often so bogged down in appeals processes that we're never really certain how long it will take for any impact to have whatsoever. But yeah, I think the social media ban, how wide that goes, and some of the EU Digital Markets Act stuff is going to be what's really important to take a look at over the next few years.
Yeah. And Rachel, I'd be keen to get your thoughts on this and more specifically on the social media ban, because obviously you're on the ground in Australia, but how do you see it working and how do you think that uncertainty around users on social media would affect brand spend and just general media plans?
Well, it's super interesting, right? Because, you know, the introduction of the social media ban has really come from the point of view of protection of children and young people. So the thesis behind it is that, you know, social media use and the addictive nature of social media platforms has now been proven to be bad for children from the point of view that it can encourage really addictive behaviours and it can, create a very disproportionate world for children and young people to live in, which is inherently unsafe because they don't necessarily understand the parameters of social media platforms when they're quite young. I mean, they can maybe understand broadly how they work, but it's an environment that has been proven time and time again to really not add any value to the lives of young people, children and young people. But that has become, understandably, as a result of everything I've just said then, hugely debatable, right? So there is, I keep saying to people here in Australia and also others in the industry when we raise this topic, I personally think that if legislators can be successful with implementing the social media ban, and I'll come onto that in a minute, the success of implementation, that there's every chance that we could look back on this piece of legislation and this movement to ban social media access for people under 16 in another 5 years' time and think of it like the smoking ban back in the 90s and the early 2000s. It was something at the time that people didn't think was achievable. You know, I mean, you can't stop people smoking in a public place. Like, how can you do that? It's an infringement on their, you know, and their own personal rights and their civil liberties. But if you think about how that legislation came into force, it was about the protection of people in a workplace that couldn't escape passive smoke and the fear that people that owned those workplaces, bars, restaurants, cafes, other public places, might have legal cases brought against them and might somehow be liable for someone's, you know, for an employee's well-being and health. So that's where that sort of pool of legislation started, because well before the ban on smoking in public places came into force, everybody knew there was no benefits associated with smoking. It was only for sure, you know, people will routinely say, oh yeah, but you know, my auntie smoked until she was 95 and didn't contract lung cancer. Like, yeah, sure, it doesn't give everyone lung cancer, but it's still got no health benefits, like none at all. And it's highly addictive, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like that's how we might look at social media platforms in another sort of 5 to 10 years' time. Like, what benefit is it actually bringing to, you know, to our lives in general, but specifically to the lives of children and young people? And I think that's a whole other risk to the advertising industry. It's a massive risk to social media platform owners, because I think that's what they're more worried about than loss of revenue associated with advertising to young people right now. You're right, John, that can be very real and will certainly speak volumes if advertisers start to move away from those social media platforms and think we've got to reach these audiences somewhere else, or we've got to wait until they're over 16 to reach them with relevant messages. But I think it's a bigger issue than that. I think that actually people might start to really recognize how much social media platforms don't really help us in society from a mental health point of view. Now, I recognize there's a whole other side to this, because I've spoken with lots of young people here in Australia who are on or around the cutoff age. I've got to say 50% of them have been able to circumvent any of the controls and get back onto social media platforms without any difficulty at all. So they've obviously really got to work much harder on recognition software and age constraints and, you know, barriers to people accessing those platforms. And I've also spoken with lots of, you know, youngsters who say, but this is the main method of communication that I have with my friends. They've all found alternatives, obviously. So they use, you know, other channels that are not advertising fueled and aren't really social media platforms. They're more messaging services. And then there's the odd young person that's entrepreneurial and is talking about how they've built up a little business for themselves, and they get their customers from social media platforms. Well, we know plenty of businesses that do that, right? So those are the controversies that are injected into the debate. But I think it's awesome, of course, because I think anyone that tries to hold those social media companies to account for the quality of the information that's available on their platform and the content that's made available on their platform is doing the right thing. And I think that if it has the impact, desired impact, you know, that the legislators hope it will have, then we could be having a whole different conversation about social media platforms in another 5 or 6 years' time. Put it this way, there's a senator here in Australia who is going hard after Meta and their lack of responsibility around content moderation. And this is well beyond the social media ban, right? Because those debates have been had in Parliament for the last 4 years here in Australia, and implementation is what they're focusing on now. Now they're moving on to regulation of social media platforms or big tech owners. And this senator is just not backing down. And his argument is you publish information, you should be held to account in exactly the same way that news publishers are. I don't care if you haven't created the content, you have to find some way to moderate that content and take responsibility for what appears on your platform. So I just think that this is going to continue to fuel that conversation, and it could have a massive impact on marketing and advertising. But one little note I'd attach to that is that that marketing and advertising spend and those eyeballs will go somewhere else, and they probably should go somewhere else. Like, I don't think we should be spending this amount of time on social media platforms. Let's go find other places to do stuff. So I don't think it's all bad news for brands and advertisers and agencies and ad tech platforms, but I do think that it's about social media platforms and how they deal with and regulate the content that's available on their platform and how harmful that content is to children and young people.
Yeah. There's a lot there. And you're right. Over a couple of years, let's see what happens. People will find ways around it. Teenagers will find ways around it, but things will just progress and get harder to access, and all for their own mental health. Excellent. Well, yeah, thank you both. I think we can leave it there for today. I'm going to thank Kerry, Steve and Paul for their questions. And Rachel, thank you so much for your thoughts.
My pleasure. It was great to join the Mad Tech podcast on the very first mailbag special.
Yes. And John, as always, great to have you.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to next month when we'll get more listeners involved. But yeah, that was great. Great questions and good fun. Thank you.
Yeah, amazing. Great. And for anyone who's listening, if you have a question that you want us to answer, you can email podcast@exchangewire.com and we will then answer your questions in the next mailbag special. So yeah, thank you everyone. And that's it from the MadTech podcast.
You've been listening to the MadTech podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.